I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we continue our All Things Political coverage because today, as you know, is the start of the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Our own Sean Johnson is in Cleveland. He has been Wisconsin Public Radio's state capitol reporter since 2004. Stories heard almost every single day on our newscast. He's a regular guest on the talk shows, and does he ever have a busy week? I mean, he's going to be on many of our programs, and his stories have also been featured on NPR's Morning Edition, All Things Considered. He's won many awards for his broadcasting work, and we're delighted to have him with us from Cleveland. We'll be welcoming phone calls. There are a lot of speakers from Wisconsin who are going to be up there. I guess Sheriff David Clark of Milwaukee County is going to be speaking tonight. We'll talk about the others, why they are there, what his thoughts are about where the Wisconsin delegates are on Donald Trump, and whatever else you would like to talk about and he would like to discuss. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. Hello, Sean. Thank you very much for being with us. Whoopsie, I got the wrong thing up there. Hi, Sean.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you so well. It's unbelievable.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's an absolute.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Are you going to have a pretty busy week or what, Sean?
I think so. Everyone said it's morning till night, nonstop, and wear comfortable shoes is the advice that I got, and so far that seems to be true.
That's a really good idea, and have a little bit of chocolate in your pocket for yourself and for other people, and you'll be the head of the party.
Just one more thing to get through the security checkpoints.
Oh, yeah. Are they elaborate? Security is elaborate?
Yeah, it's pretty thorough, and I mean, just in this convention center where I'm at right now, it's surrounded by these concrete barriers and these really tall steel fences, basically.
Ooh.
So you get through sort of the checkpoints where all they do is look at your ID badge, go through a couple of those, and you go through the metal detectors. Somebody goes through, if you're somebody carrying a lot of gear, like mm-hmm. I was today, they check all that, and then you wind your way down to a media filing center where you're reminded there are a lot of reporters here in Cleveland this week.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. Are there a lot of protesters? I just heard a snatch of the NPR news that they were highlighting some protests. Do you see a lot of protesters? We heard there were going to be many. Are there?
So today, I've been in places where I haven't been able to see the protests firsthand. I did yesterday. I would say a few hundred people were going through downtown yesterday and accompanied by police as they went. And this was a protest about police. It was calling police racist in light of the recent shootings. Police were, riding along by on bike patrol in mm-hmm. pretty elaborate formations with some pretty elaborate armor, too. Basically just watching the protest as it went, and, you know, at least the protest that I watched, there were no confrontations. I know there were protests springing up all over the place today, and I would certainly expect that to happen throughout the week.
Right. Well, Donald Trump may be having a hard time gathering notable sports celebrities to be with him on the stage. He certainly has a lot of family members, but he also has a fair representation of people from the state of Wisconsin who will be speaking this week. How did that happen, and who are they, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, for a state, the last state that he lost in the primary calendar, there's pretty strong representation from Wisconsin. And I think part of that is due to the fact that we have prominent leaders from Wisconsin. Reince Priebus is the chairman of the Republican National Convention, so of course he's going to speak. Paul Ryan is the Speaker of the House. He may have been hesitant to endorse Donald Trump, may have said on a number of occasions that he doesn't support something that Donald Trump has said, but at the end of the day, he's the Speaker of the House. Mm-hmm. He's perhaps the most prominent, visible Republican other than those who have run for president this year. What's he going to do? So he's speaking. But then you go down the list, and there are some others who, you know, maybe they didn't have to be on that stage, but Governor Scott Walker decided to be one of the speakers for Donald Trump. And again, this is somebody who he's criticized. He criticized when he was running for president last year. He's criticized him throughout the year, but he is he has agreed to be a speaker for Trump, and he's said nice things about him lately. But I think you look at the speaker list tonight, and that could be very interesting. You got especially Sheriff Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark. And I think just given everything that people are talking about in the country right now in light of African-Americans being shot by police, in light of police being shot recently and on multiple occasions, you know, Sheriff David Clark is an African-American sheriff who is very outspoken against the Black Lives Matter movement and very outspoken in his support of police and in his view that police are being targeted. So, you know, I think that could be potentially the news of the evening, given mm-hmm. that he doesn't usually pull his punches.
No, he certainly doesn't. And he's also very pro-gun. I wonder if he'll say
very
anything
pro-gun.
About it.
And that's he's become a national figure, really, on that issue alone. And has really become kind of a darling of the NRA.
Yeah. So I would imagine if you're Paul Ryan and you have called Donald Trump to task for some of his more outrageous comments and you find yourself in the position of trying to unify a party that is, my gosh, not very unified at all, consider the number of governors and Republican senators who are not showing up for this convention, which is amazing. How do you, if in your heart you really don't like a lot of what Donald Trump has had to say, what do you do? Because these are cheerleading kinds of experiences. You rally the troops. You talk about how wonderful this person is. Does it become just an anti-Hillary message more than a pro-Trump message or what?
I would say when it comes from Paul Ryan, yes, that it's been much, much more of an anti-Hillary message than it has been pro-Trump. And when it comes to Trump, he says we have more in common than differences, but he doesn't really get into that. I mean, just to give you an example, Paul Ryan was the featured speaker at the breakfast for the Wisconsin Republican delegation this morning. Mm. Spoke for, you know, about 15 minutes, a little less. He spoke about the House Republican agenda and how he said that they are they're kind of presenting an alternative to moving the country forward after President Obama. Talked about breaking the cycle of poverty. He talked about reducing the power of the federal government. Stuff you've heard him talk about before. He did not talk about Donald Trump or his role in enacting that agenda or what Wisconsin Republicans need to do to elect Donald Trump. He never mentioned him by name, so it does get to be awkward. Yeah, I mean, this is a week that is basically set up to celebrate Donald Trump, as you mentioned, and to formally nominate him. And to kick off the week, you have, you know, one of the nation's most prominent Republicans speaking to his home state and not even mentioning Donald Trump by name.
Wow. Are we going to have the biography? Is that going to be presented tonight or later, lavishly done? Was that done by the RNC? Are they heavily involved in all the production of this whole week?
Yeah, I mean, everything in the production is has a lot of RNC involvement, including, you know, the accommodations are planned in part by Steve King is another RNC member from Wisconsin, another RNC, you know, another national Republican connection here. Yeah, it's a big show designed to get people thinking about Donald Trump as president. Not only the people who are here, who they expect to go out and raise money and knock on doors, but the eyes of America who are watching. And so you do see a lot of family members, though, speaking this week, even compared to you know, previous years.
Right.
And maybe fewer of the traditional incumbent politicians. Although there certainly is you know, a share of elected leaders that are going to speak here, including those from Wisconsin.
Well, what happened with Senator Johnson? I read last week that he probably wasn't going to go to the convention. Then I heard, well, maybe it's not too far away. He'll drop in for a while. And now he's one of the speakers at the convention. What happened?
Yeah, it's a pretty big change of plans there. It seemed to me like kind of big news when maybe it was a month or so ago. He said he's not going to go to the convention. And the campaign basically stood by that line even recently when Senator Johnson told another radio program, yeah, I might drop in. The campaign said, no, our plans are to stay in Wisconsin and Now here he is a speaker, and it's really noteworthy, I think, for Ron Johnson, because among all the Senate incumbents in America, Republicans, he is perhaps the, you know, maybe the number one or number two best chance of flipping from Republican to Democrat in his race with Russ Feingold, you know, for a variety of factors. And there's been some real reluctance among these targeted Republicans to embrace Donald Trump for, you know, any number of reasons. I mean, Donald Trump says provocative things. A lot of people view him negatively in America. And so for Ron Johnson to say, not only am I going to be here, I'm going to speak on stage for Donald Trump, right, is basically seems to say that he's prepared to, you know, to latch onto this election season and to his party's front runner completely. And, you know, we'll see how that plays out in a state like Wisconsin.
I'm wondering about the national attention paid to Wisconsin. I understand that Wisconsin has a front row area, probably as a measure of respect given to the people who really turned this state red, which must have been a very big deal in Republican circles. And you have all these people who helped turn the state red who are having featured roles in the Republican convention and front row seating for the delegates. Do you sense a measure of respect for the Republican Wisconsin people who did this incredible political feat at the convention? Are they given deference?
I'm not sure exactly why that's there. I think it could be something just as practical as Wisconsin delegates know the guy that is planning this thing. You know, I've got to think that he has some amount of say in that. You know, Paul Ryan is also I think formally the chair of the convention and Speaker of the House. So even though he doesn't have a huge role personally in planning the nuts and bolts decisions of this, he has a former role at a convention like this. So there he is up close to the stage. And there's the Wisconsin Republican delegation where Reince Priebus was once the, you know, the state party chair, and now he's heading the national party. Right. So yeah, his friends get taken care of.
Yeah, I guess so. That's what life is all about, taking care of your friends, right? Let's go to some phone calls for you. Our number is 800-486-8655. Sean Johnson is our reporter, wonderful WPR political reporter, state capitol reporter, and has been for some time, files a lot of reports for National Public Radio as well. And he is in Cleveland and will be on many shows, Joy Cardine's show on Central Time, as this week goes on. He's going to be working darned hard. Let's go to Ed in West Dallas. Hi, Ed. Hello? Well, I'm sorry, call's back. I don't know where you are, so let's go to Charlie in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. As I look at the electorate, I think a lot of people are angry about the fact that nothing seems to be done on a national level. Does your guest feel that Donald Trump, with the lack of representatives of the Republican Party attending his convention, does he feel that Donald Trump, even if elected, would have difficulty governing as opposed to an election of Hillary Clinton?
Okay. I'm sorry. We got two lines at once there. Got your point and your question. Sean, what do you say?
We don't know what Congress is going to look like, right? I mean, there are a number of Senate seats that are in play, and so you could have the Senate potentially flip from Republican to Democratic control. It's going to be harder to flip the House just because of the way that the districts are drawn and the power of incumbency there. But, you know, I guess you have to run through the scenarios of what things look like. If it's Donald Trump and a Republican Congress, you know, it's definitely easier to get things happening. It just becomes a matter of how important some of his priorities are and how those mesh with Republican leaders. I mean, you know, if Donald Trump says, hey, at every rally I was at this year, I talked about the need to build a wall and, you know, deport people who are here illegally. So we got to get 11 to 12 million people out of the country. And I'm really firm on this. We have to do this. Then, yeah, that's probably going to run into some resistance in Congress if he kind of backs away from that and says, like, well, we're going to find a solution that works for everybody, which maybe doesn't sound like him from what you've heard on the campaign. But if that's the Donald Trump you see and that's the kind of Congress you see, then maybe you see them agreeing on stuff. But we've entered a world of a lot of speculation at this point, and, you know, we just don't know what it's going to look like.
We just don't know about much of this, do we?
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, at this point, if you look at just the early polling and the Electoral College, it favors Hillary Clinton at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Though I think a lot of Democrats are dismayed that the race is as tight as it is.
It is tight. 4 points, yeah. Perhaps. Yeah, that's not much.
And, I mean, it matters where the polls are being taken. You win a race for president by winning the right states. You know, looking at national polling and where those two candidates are nationally isn't as significant as looking state by state. But it does go to show, I think, how polarized America is right now, that, you know, both parties, even, you know, in a primary season when you know there are Democrats and Republicans who aren't satisfied with who their party nominated. It's about to nominate. As we get closer to the election, Republicans and Democrats kind of retreat to their respective camps and say, okay, we'll do this.
Mm-hmm. I was interested in an opinion piece written by Peter Wenner, who worked for the last three Republican administrations and is with the Ethics and Public Policy Center now. He said, he said a lot of things in this column that he wrote yesterday, including that Donald Trump is a repudiation of Lincoln. Republicans will have to choose whose vision of the party they want to follow. He also talked, and I wonder if we have a sense of this, Sean. There are plenty of Republicans who either oppose Trump or are queasy about supporting him. He didn't win a majority of the total votes cast in the primary, but we also have a sense that Trumpism is on the ascendance right now. Do we have polling? Do we have a sense, really, of how many people are Republicans who are not crazy about Donald Trump and either won't vote for him, will sit this one out or vote for a third party or whatever, or not vote for the presidency? Do we know?
I'm a little more familiar with what it looks like in Wisconsin.
Yeah, fine.
And polling there. And if you look at Republican support for Donald Trump in Wisconsin, it's not like Scott Walker's support during the recalls or during the 2014 election, where pretty much every Republican in Wisconsin says, yeah, we're going to vote. And we're going to vote for Scott Walker, and they're all on the same page. You just don't see that with Donald Trump. And I think, at least in Wisconsin, the really significant group of Republicans who aren't sold on Donald Trump at this point seems to be in Southeast Wisconsin, which is one of the conservative powerhouses, not only Wisconsin, but in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a deeply red conservative area that wins elections for Republican at the statewide level. And it's very unusual to see Southeast Wisconsin conservatives saying, we're not there yet. And particularly some in conservative talk radio, Charlie Sykes being probably the best known and the most outspoken, saying, I'm not going to vote for Trump, and ridiculing him on the air. So it's an unusual election season just if you look at that little slice of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a couple calls for you. Let's go to Ed in West Allis. Hi.
Well, good afternoon. Glad you got the room at the Travel Lodge. The seven steel workers, unemployed steel workers, come up consistently on Sunday morning chat shows. And I just want to say that those of us in organized labor, the right to work plank is firmly rooted in the Republican platform. Mr. Trump has come out in favor of right to work. He has stated that unionized workers make too much money. And we're very organized. We have already had four mailings from both the state and the national AFL-CIO. You're going to see just a huge turnout of support of unionized households for Hillary Clinton.
All right, I'm going to hold you there, Ed. We have tons of phone calls. Sean, will you see that?
Will you see unions turn out in a big way
for Hillary Clinton?
I think I think the question is, yeah, organized labor is definitely going to be on her side. Absolutely. I think what Donald Trump is banking on is that he would get some union rank and file or blue-collar workers who like his policies. But yes, organized labor is definitely polling for Democrats this year, definitely polling for Hillary Clinton. And, you know, while some in labor pushed for Bernie Sanders in the primary, you know, they're coming around to her side now.
Yeah, but certainly without the clout they had in the past, right?
You know, yes, especially in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. you know, because of what's happened to public employee unions here, their power has definitely been reduced. And, you know, there's just no way around that. They just don't have the resources to do what they once did. Nationally, it's not such a significant drop, though. I mean, they're more where they were. You know, if you look at Wisconsin 2010 compared to 2016, it's just a sea change, and it's not such a change nationally.
Mm-hmm. One more call for you, Dave in Heartland. Hi.
Hey, forgive my landline. It's clicking, and it's not my brain. First, I got to say, what will we do without Kathleen Dunn?
What do you mean?
You're special, you know.
Oh, thanks,
give us
Dave.
A good ride.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, here, I'm calling about Leslie Stahl. For y'all that listened to 60 Minutes last night.
Okay.
Boy, it's noisy there.
He's at the convention.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll continue.
Okay.
She was the first to interview, 60 Minutes, first to interview Mike Pence.
Mm-hmm.
And she did not ask the all-important question. How is Donald Trump, and I put this on my Facebook page, how is Donald Trump going to be commander-in-chief and president, and please, my phone is clicking, when he's got all these real estate investments, like the golf course in Scotland, and I'll hang up.
Bye. All right. Thanks, Dave, for your call. Sean?
Yeah, you haven't had a president in his situation.
No,
before,
you haven't.
Exactly.
It's true.
And, I mean, he's deeply involved in a number of legal fights, too, in a number of lawsuits, mm-hmm. Which would be something you would play out while he was in the Oval Office, were he elected president. So I don't know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm. So what happens the rest of the day, Sean?
The rest of the day, I mean, the speaking program, the real primetime speaking program begins tonight, and that's when you'll have not only Sheriff David Clark, but also Congressman Sean Duffy, who's...
Oh, he's tonight, too. Oh.
He is tonight, too. Rachel Campos Duffy, his wife, they met in MTV's Real World. But Sean Duffy's 7th Congressional District is one of the two Wisconsin Congressional Districts that Donald Trump won. So that's partly why he's there. He was pretty quick to embrace Donald Trump because he's popular up there. So they're all speaking tonight. And so just getting there and getting around Cleveland and getting in place to watch them, given all the security barriers up around this place, is as exciting as that sounds, that will be, you know, a big part of my evening.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. Are you posting pictures at all? Are there pictures we can see from you?
Yeah. I'm sending some in. They'll be at WPR.org.
Okay.
I posted a couple to my Twitter account, but not enough. So hopefully I'll be, you know, pushing out some more of those.
Okay. Well, you know, take it easy, too.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Sean. Thanks for being
Kathleen.
With us. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's state capitol reporter. You can hear him, and you will hear a lot of him this week. He'll be on Joy's show. He'll be on Central Time. He'll be on WPR's newscast covering the convention pretty much around the clock. Good reporter. So we'll look forward to his insights. We're going to continue. We're doing a two-hour All Things Political because the Republican National Convention, as you know, is starting today. So we have two guests coming up, and we'll meet them momentarily and take more of your phone calls. If you're on hold, please just stay where you are. We'll be with you, I promise. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we continue our conversation about the Republican National Convention. Two more guests now, Orrin Cass. Orrin is senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and former domestic policy director of Mitt Romney's presidential campaign. He's been with us before, and we thank you for being here again, Orrin. Hi.
Hey, it's great to be back.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Also joining us is David Martosko. He is U.S. political editor at the Daily Mail, and I believe he is a Cleveland guy. You were born in Cleveland? You grew up in Cleveland, David?
Yes, this is my my hometown until I left at age 17, but I'm back for the convention festivities and looking forward to a lot of fun.
Yeah, you're back for quite a ride this week, I'm sure. Who knows exactly what's going to happen? Orrin, let me start with you, because Mitt Romney is among those who will not be attending this convention, as there are a number, 21 senators. I keep saying 21 senators is a lot of Republican senators, not coming, current governors, House members. Why aren't they coming? What does that do for Donald Trump's chances? Do you care? Does Mitt Romney care? Well, that was about three questions, so go ahead.
Well, you'd have to ask Mitt Romney if he cares. You know, I don't especially care. I think it's a reflection of what has happened to the party since Donald Trump became the presumptive nominee, which is that it has split into those who are going to make the best of it and go forward as mm-hmm. supporters of Donald Trump, and those who are not. And some of that on both sides is principled. Some of that on both sides is political. But the calculation, if you're an elected representative, is are you someone who wants to be associated with Donald Trump? Because if you do, then you want to be there, you want to be on TV, you want to be talking to the reporters. And if you don't want to be associated with him, then there's certainly nothing for you in Cleveland.
Yeah. Well, it is the task, isn't it, of this convention to make sure a lot more Republicans vote for Donald Trump, to bring out people who might be disaffected. Do you know if the orchestration of this convention will achieve that? And how would you achieve that? Can you even achieve that?
Well, I mean, if you look at the lineup that they've managed to actually nail down, it doesn't look likely to achieve that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think the convention is more the ends than the means. If Donald Trump had been serious about consolidating traditional Republican support, he would have needed to use the 2 months since he sewed up the nomination to show that he was interested in that and to make noises in that direction. And if he had done that, you might imagine seeing a lineup of speakers at the convention that actually reflected him having earned support.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he has spent the last 2 months doing exactly the opposite, and the convention roster that he's putting forward is a reflection of that, and it's a reflection of what I think is his campaign strategy to try to push ahead through November and build enough support the way that he did in the primary, on the momentum of celebrity and spectacle, not on the momentum of conservative policies.
Well, I'm afraid there isn't going to be enough spectacle this week. After all, well, no, really, Donald Trump is arranging it. I would have expected there to be a lot of spectacle.
It certainly doesn't seem like he's even managed to attract many, especially spectacular, in the literal meaning of the word, people. You know,
right.
I think it will be interesting to see as this progresses. There may be a lot of spectacle outside of his control, depending on what votes are held on the floor, depending on what happens outside the convention hall.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly he didn't manage to put together a list of speakers that I think are going to be must-see TV mm. for anybody.
Well, David, you had an interesting Twitter today. Speaking of speakers, the RNC just couldn't get it together with the right bios for the people who are speakers. They were just way off. Who put this together? It was terrible. Whoops, hello, David? Oh, wait, I'm sorry, David. Could you start again?
It was pretty insane. It was like all the interns took over, and for most of yesterday evening, they had the wrong speakers with the wrong bios. You know, it was just a mess. They fixed it up by this morning, but it was like, are you guys drunk? What are you doing?
No.
they run the risk at this point of organizationally of this event running off the rails in a lot of different ways.
Oh, really?
Security is kind of interesting. People are complaining about long lines getting into things. But more to the point, I think they're running the risk, as you said, of pulling off an underwhelming convention. Now, to that point, I will give Donald Trump credit for one thing, which was when he was asked this morning on morning show about Melania Trump speaking tonight, he kind of dropped as an aside, oh, you know, I may want to kind of say a few words myself. So he's already injected the suspense of, gosh, is he going to speak every night? Are we going to tune in to hear Trump every night? Because the entirety of his campaign has been about the suspense of what is he going to say next.
Right.
And he may very well be able to pull off the must-see TV on the sole strength of the question of what he's going to say next, which is what he's really good at. So I'm not all that worried about the speaker roster to line up. All people really care about in this election from the Republican side is what crazy thing is Trump going to say next? Is it going to hurt him? Will somebody find the bullet that finally kills the Trump monster? Or is it just going to be nothing matters, nothing matters, nothing matters until the end? That's the game. That's the suspense. And if he does speak every night, believe me, people will not be talking about anybody else on the roster.
He's going to speak perhaps every night, and the TV cameras will be on him ceaselessly for the entire week. They've already done that, haven't they?
Well, yeah, but this is a whole different... Remember, these conventions introduce a new audience
right.
to Trump. Believe me, there are hundreds of thousands of people who watch these live streams on television of all of his speeches, and they tune in to see what he said, and they comment on blogs and news articles. But there's also sort of a centrist, moderate core of America, sort of the sweet, fat part of the bell curve. And among those that he hasn't attracted yet, a lot of those people are going to tune in to actually watch him for the first time in a political setting. And if I were advising him, I'd say you'd be stupid not to speak every night this week. This is your big moment.
David. Well, I guess there aren't too many other people who want to speak. We heard from Chris Deaton from the Weekly Standard last hour that within the last hour, about an hour and a half or so now, that there had been a Rules Committee meeting, and I guess the conscience clause didn't make enough votes to get it out of committee, but that there will be some kind of conscience presentation from the floor of the convention. Can either of you confirm that, Oren?
I certainly can't.
David, how about you?
I can confirm that the Never Trump people have secured the support of enough state delegations. They have to get the majority of seven delegations to sign on to a sort of a miniature minority report in order to force a roll call vote on the floor of the convention about whether to approve this conscience matter. So they basically found an end run around the Rules Committee, and that will be presented later today.
Oh, it will be? Before tonight's festivities? Before Donald starts speaking tonight?
Apparently, yes. Apparently, it'll probably be... my understanding is it'll be kicked off at the beginning of the evening session. It'll be kind of dispensed with very quickly. But there will be some sort of a vote on the floor about whether or not to kick in this conscience clause, because enough states' delegations in majorities have approved it.
Yeah. So what do you do? Maybe there are people who fit this bill. I don't know. But, Oren, what do you think? Usually conventions, you have people who sing your praises, who talk about how wonderful you are and all you've done and what a great president you would be. Does Trump have enough of those people to fill the stage for him this week?
Well, he does. They're just all related to him.
Oh, no.
All of the names he's released will undoubtedly speak about him in glowing terms. How credible those statements are is a little bit worrying, but it's more so who he doesn't have speaking for him. You know, if he wants to bring together a broad coalition, you need to have voices from across that coalition speaking, and that's what he'll be lacking. But at the end of the day, his path, at least through the Republican primary, was that didn't matter as much. That if he himself said enough things that got enough people excited, he could win. And the question is not whether that strategy is plausible in a general election, but whether the math adds up in a general election.
Yeah.
And that's where I think people are rightly skeptical.
Yeah. Well, his family likes him a lot, don't they, David?
Who likes him a lot? I'm sorry, his family, you said?
His family. They're all speaking on his behalf.
Well, of course. My family likes me a lot, too, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to be elected to run anything. I couldn't get elected a dog catcher on the sheer strength of what my kids say about me. I'm of the opinion, having followed him on the campaign trail for a year and a half now, and having seen more than 150 of his rallies and met literally thousands of his supporters, I'm of the opinion that the speaker lineup in this convention won't matter nearly as much as people think it will, and that the missing 20 senators won't matter even a little bit. It just won't matter. What will matter is what chases each night of the convention in the next day's social media, the next day's talk radio cycle, the next day's blogs. So we won't find out tonight whether the lineup mattered until tomorrow, and we won't find out whether tomorrow night's lineup matters until Wednesday. But all of that will percolate through Republicans, and you'll start to see, I think, over time, whether the uncertain sort of fence sitters will start to say, okay, this isn't so bad. I can get behind this. He's saying some things I agree with, and Pence is a moderating force. that's really what matters. Nobody cares if this senator or that senator doesn't show up. I mean, Pat Roberts just spoke 20 minutes ago, and I don't think anybody in Kansas, you know, tomorrow could tell you whether he showed up or not.
Right. Well, what about those who have been sitting on the fence, Orrin? Do you have any sense of what all those people, not just senators or governors, but people who are Republicans who don't like Donald Trump very much, do you have any idea of what they're going to do?
You mean as during the convention or,
no.
or as the election?
No, when the election comes, are they going to vote? Is there a chance they can be persuaded in the next 4 days?
You know, I've actually been surprised by the number of people I've heard from who sort of say yes, and I think the Mike Pence choice is a piece of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, say what you will about the disastrous process that led to it, the fact that at the end Trump went with Pence, who checks all of the conservative boxes and none of the showmanship boxes, and is even on the record being against virtually every one of Trump's signature issues. I've at least seen some people say, you know, that at least earns another look from me.
Interesting.
And then on the flip side, I think there are the people who say this isn't even about policy choices anymore. Trump as a personality and as a person is disqualified from getting my vote. No matter, you know, he could come out tomorrow and say verbatim everything I believe about policy, and at this point it wouldn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that you definitely have a group willing to give him another listen and a group who's already heard enough.
Mm-hmm. David, what do you think?
I think there will be some people, some Republican, registered Republicans, who will go to vote in the fall and will leave the presidential line blank. That number will be an interesting number the day after Election Day. They'll vote, you know, a straight Republican ticket, but they'll basically abstain on the presidential line. But I think the larger group of Republicans, those fence sitters, those people who have been like, oh, God, can I do this? Can I stomach it? I think the big push at the end, and I base this on conversations with campaign insiders, the big push is not going to be about Donald Trump. It's going to be about the alternative. It's going to be about Donald Trump being the one who's going to save the country from Hillary Clinton. And that's a message that will appeal and resonate heavily with centrist Republicans who say, okay, no matter what I think about Trump, 4 years of Donald Trump, okay, it's going to kind of be like, meh, we're not quite sure what he's doing. He's going to make a lot of noise. But 4 or 8 years of Hillary Clinton is something the country can't survive. And that's the prevailing attitude inside even centrists in the Republican camp.
Interesting. Well, it's also what Democrats are saying, too. Particularly,
well, a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters are certainly saying that.
Yeah.
And I've heard from Bernie Sanders supporters at Trump rallies who are saying, I'm coming here to take a look at him in case Bernie doesn't survive. Then I go with Trump. And I've also heard from an awful lot of people who are invisible to pollsters. People who say to me some variety of, and I've had this conversation literally 100 times with people in the campaign trail in the last year, some variety of, I'm 55, I'm a welder, my dad voted Democrat, my wife votes Republican, I've never registered to vote in my life, but I'm voting this time because finally this guy speaks my language.
Interesting.
And those people are invisible to pollsters because they're not on anybody's radar.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, who knows? I mean, who knows at this point? It's also interesting, and Orrin, let's go to you, and David, I want your response, too. The national polls, who knows where they're going to be a month from now or 2 months from now? What is it? But at the moment, it's a fairly close race. How do you explain that, Orrin?
It is. You know, for a while, it looked like it was starting to drift toward Clinton, and
yes.
Now it has drifted back closer. For me, the more interesting thing is the absolute values. You know, the fact that they're both stuck at around 40.
Yes, exactly.
Is really what is, I don't know if I can say unprecedented, but certainly out of the norm and out of recent cycles, and suggests just a huge amount of unpredictability and volatility going forward. I mean, it's one thing, you know, and I don't remember the exact numbers 4 years ago, but if you're locked at 49, 46, you kind of have a sense of where you're going to be at the end, give or take a couple points. When you're locked at 41, 38, you really have no idea. And so I think the polls are, it's important to take the polls seriously in the sense that they convey how up in the air things are, but not take it seriously as an implication that, well, we're in for a close race. It really means we're in for a race that could go anywhere.
David, what do you think?
Here's the thing, and I'm glad Orrin said that about the absolute values. Being locked at 40-40 at this stage is just bizarre because it indicates a lot of negative thinking. It's the candidates' negatives that are getting in the way. The reason they're not locked at 48-48 or 47-47 is because there's 7 or 8% on each side of the fence who can't stomach the idea of supporting their party's candidate.
Right.
So what's going to happen moving forward is what matters. And this is why the Trump people are confident, okay? What they'll say to you in quiet, unguarded moments is, look, we can, in 3 months, we can change the minds of the 5 or 6% who are holding back. We can change it by changing his words a little bit. We can change the campaign settings. He's not going to do as many rallies to 10,000 people anymore. He's going to talk to a few hundred. We can change the media cycles, and we can put Mike Pence out there a little bit more. So they can actually change the dynamic. But what they believe is that Hillary Clinton's negatives are rigid. They're rocked in there. You can't change what people think about her regarding her emails and Benghazi and corruption at the State Department. She can't change that, where Trump can actually affect the predicate for his negatives in the numbers.
Hmm. Well, let's welcome phone calls. We'll take them momentarily. We have a full bank of phone lines filled for David Martasco, who's U.S. political editor at the Daily Mail, and Orrin Kass, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, former domestic policy director of Mitt Romney's presidential campaign. 800-486-8655. Our Facebook page, we like to read your messages there, too, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls now. And Jim in Rice Lake. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen. I'd like to premise this, my comments or questions to your guests, with the following statement. I'm not voting for Donald Trump, but despite arguably one of the most incompetent national rollouts of his campaign, his comments about the federal judges' ethnic background, his bad rollout of his VP, he's only 3 points down. And I want to get your guest comments to this thought. I think the most significant political event we've had in this race or in this nation in years is that 8 police officers, 7 of whom were white, were killed by 2 African Americans the last week. And if this continues, won't this drive white America from reluctance of Donald Trump into Donald Trump's lap and elect this unusual man to the presidency of the United States? In point, won't it be 1968 all over again? I'll take my answer off here.
Interesting question. David?
Yes, as long as Trump doesn't overplay his hand and openly cater his speech to people on racial ground. His advisors right now, I'll tell you, behind the scenes are saying, don't talk about it in terms of black and white. Let people see what's going on. But what you don't want to have is a backlash effect where people say, oh, he's turning into a racism thing. He's saying black people are evil and cop ambushers and anything. Whites are victims. And he's, you know, turning identity politics on its head consciously. He's being told, let it happen subconsciously, and people will run into your arms. But if you overplay it, people will run screaming the other direction because they'll think you're a racist.
Mm. Orrin?
Well, you know, I think what David's getting at is exactly right, which is it depends what Trump does. And I think for a few months now, we keep hearing, you know, events are playing into Trump's hands, whether it's the terror attacks or the attacks on cops. And so far, he's proven, or for instance, you know, the FBI press conference on Hillary's emails. And in every instance, he's proven either completely inept in making the attack effective or has done something that's essentially backfired. And so, you know, when you have a race that's at 40-40, one of the things it means is the campaigns are really going to matter. And one thing that will come out of these conventions also is getting a sense of whether Trump's team actually has it together and can function as a national campaign, because that's something we have not seen so far and something he's certainly going to need.
Let's go back, if we could, for a moment, the analysis of why the Republicans lost, Mitt Romney lost in 2012, this soul searching that was done, this need to reach out to more minorities, particularly Latinos. People have said that unless that happens, the presidency is beyond the reach of Republicans. Now, Donald Trump is not your normal kind of Republican here. But I'm wondering, in terms of enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton, we kind of haven't talked very much about the minority vote in this country. Are they enthusiastic about her? And does it counter those people who seem to be attracted to, who a lot of people didn't know existed, people who were hit by the recession and they're not doing very well and they tend to be white and not very well educated and they're going to him in large numbers? Do her supporters counteract that? Will they show up at the polls, David?
Well, I'm not going to have a very effective crystal ball on that, but I will say that if you look at the total numbers of votes cast in the primary cycles, Democrats saw a decrease from 2012. I forget the number. It was something like 10 to 12%. And Republicans saw a tremendous, several-fold larger increase compared to 4 years ago. Plus, you have the sort of traditional dynamic of the out-of-power party tending to have a momentum advantage with a lame duck second termer. So I think that's sort of advantage Trump, but it's a vague advantage. We really don't know. Mm. On the Democrat side of the ball, I think this depends almost entirely on how successful Secretary Clinton's staff is in reaching out to disaffected Bernie Sanders supporters. That's where the ballgame is for them. If the Sanders people sit on their hands and stay home, I don't think she has much of a chance. Yeah. But if she can romance them, maybe with the vice presidential pick, who's seen as super, super progressive, in the same way Trump needed to capture enthusiasm among, you know, evangelicals and religious conservatives with Pence, if she does that with a super progressive pick, she might survive. Otherwise, I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I'm not sure she'll do that, but I think you're spot on with that. What do you think about this, Orrin?
Well,
soul-searching, particularly.
Yeah, I mean, you can see that on the Clinton side, they know they have some work to do here. It's actually fascinating to look at the speaker roster that they put out preliminarily for next week. And other than Bill Hillary, the Obamas, and Bernie Sanders, and Joe Biden, the only people they've listed are a dreamer, so a young illegal immigrant, and a whole cohort of African-American mothers of men who have been shot, whether that's by police, or in a variety of other circumstances. And so that's essentially their entire agenda at the moment. And it shows that they know they have an enthusiasm gap they need to close, but it also is a reminder of, to some extent, where Donald came from in the first place, which is the more heavily the Clinton message steps on that, the more loudly it's going to reinforce Trump's message that's all Democrats stand for, and he can play the identity politics game too.
Right. Let's go to Willem in Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Hi. I guess I disagree with one of your guest's comments about, Hillary and Benghazi and all those things. And Donald Trump is on the record. I mean, he can change his hairdo, but he has said a lot of things that he can't unsay. He's done a lot of things that he can't undo. He is going to have to appear in court in November on a fraud charge. So I think the people what I called for was, what's troubling to me is people like Sean Duffy and Ron Johnson and Scott Walker, obviously with their support for Donald Trump, who by a lot of people's assessment, the former presidents of the United States, secretaries of state and all that, would consider a disaster. It shows to me that they're more interested in the party than they are in the country. And the last thing I wanted to say about Donald Trump is that he claims that he's religious, but have you ever known any Christians who call it 2 Corinthians? I don't think so.
Thanks very much, Willem, for your call. David?
Well, look, I will say there certainly are things that Donald Trump has said and done that have put him on defensive. But for one reason or another, they don't seem to have the staying power, if you talk to pollsters, that Hillary Clinton's long sagas with Benghazi and the emails, those seem to have stuck around longer, because she lacks the power to change the media cycle as frequently and quickly as Trump can. He can literally, at 6 in the morning, call the control room at Fox News, CNN, or NBC and say, I'd like to go on with you from phone. And in 10 minutes, he'll be on the air. And he can change the subject. And he's done that a lot, done it really well. Hillary Clinton has been, I think, a little cautious, maybe even afraid a little bit, to put herself in that situation, except with a few reporters she trusts. So, and you know, this. Remember, she hasn't held a single press conference in 2016, like not one. So she lacks that power to change the subject. So the email thing keeps churning. The Benghazi thing keeps churning. And as it churns, it picks up momentum and makes it harder to erase. Trump's things tend to vanish more quickly because he can literally get on TV by snapping his fingers and change the subject.
Yeah. One more call. We have 1 minute left. Bob in West Jackson Forks. Hi.
Hi, thanks. I'll make this real brief. Given what's happened to the convention, I don't think Donald's going to get hung out to dry. He's too adept for that. But everybody distancing himself, Republican establishment, let's say that he does get in. Does he exact retribution, or how does he deal with all these people who are really distancing himself right now who may come back and deal with that?
Orrin.
Well, you know, I think that'll vary. I think there will be a lot of people who just never got on board and stayed quiet, who will not be his picks, but will kind of go on living and doing what they do in Washington. I suspect for the people who have kind of been the vocal, what they call never Trumpers, I think they will be rather severely on the outs and frankly have themselves said they don't really belong in the Republican Party anymore. I think win or lose for Trump, you're going to see some realignment in who even affiliates as Republicans going
forward. Yeah, things there's going to be a shakeup. Gentlemen, thank you ever so much. It was a pleasure to have both of you with us.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Thanks, Oren. Thanks, David.
Thank you. Anytime.
Yeah, thanks. All right. You're on. Our guest this hour, or half hour actually, Oren Kass, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He's a former domestic policy director of Mitt Romney's presidential campaign. David Martosko, who is in Cleveland for the weekend, is from Cleveland, U.S. political editor at the Daily Mail. So, thanks to K.P. Whaley and Scotty Myers for putting together our 2 hours. I really do love talking politics. The hours just kind of flew by. 2 hours of all things political because of the Republican National Convention, and we'll do the same for the Democratic National Convention as well. Thanks for all of your calls. Thanks for listening. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.